Welcome back, everyone, to our In the Eyes of Our Brothers Sheer. We are up to learning about... I'm just going to mute a few of you. I apologize. Feel free to unmute yourselves afterwards. We are up to learning about the tribe of God. And God is one of the most interesting brothers, as they all are the most interesting brother, whenever we are doing them. And the reason why he's so interesting is because he helps us enter into a new category of a new mother, one of the final new mother in terms of all the tribes, and we're going to learn about Zilpah a little bit for the first few minutes of the shiur, in particular because we want to understand why it is that Yaakov ever goes ahead and marries Zilpah, right? So if you take a step back for a second, we understand why Yaakov marries every single one of the other imahos, right? So he marries Leah, okay, that was an accident, he meant to marry Rachel, but he marries Leah, so he's married to Leah. Then he goes ahead and he marries Rachel, and so he's married to Leah, and he then marries Rachel, fine. Then he has children with Leah, he has four children to be exact. Rachel feels terrible that she doesn't have any children, and so she says, Yaakov, marry my maidservant, and she will serve as a surrogate mother, or rather, she will serve as the biological mother, and I the surrogate mother for her children, and it will be as if I have brought new children into the world through her. Great, so Yaakov marries Bilhah. Why in the world does Yaakov ever go ahead and marry Zilpah? That seems to be so out of place and so unnecessary. If it's for Leah, then Leah already has four children, so she doesn't need a woman to give birth to more children for her. And if it's for the sake of Zilpah, well, why does he marry Zilpah? He's not okay with the three wives that he has originally. So the answer seems to be that it is clear, I mean, the pasuk says clearly, take a look at source number one, that Vatira Leah ki amda miledes, Leah notices that she stopped giving birth, Vatikach Zilpah shevchasa, Vatitino sali Yaakov l'isha. And so Zilpah goes ahead, and Leah goes ahead and gives Zilpah to Yaakov as a wife. Why? Because she wants to have children through Zilpah. We'll see in a second, though, that doesn't make any sense, so the commentary struggled with why that is, but let's see what happens. Vatilid Zilpah Shivchas Leah Liakov Bain, and she gives birth to a son. Vatomar Leah Bagad Vatikra Eshmo God. So Leah says some interesting word that we're going to see what it means. There's a machlokas as to what the word means, but she says this word Bagad, and she therefore calls his name God. So what does Bagad actually mean? So take a look at Rashi, source number two. So you have the first, so Rashi gives a total of two perspectives as to what this word Bagad means, and therefore that will help us understand what Leah's mood was when she named God. So again, Rashi, source number two, Ba Mazel Tov! So when God was born, Leah said, wow, Mazel Tov, this is so exciting, what a beautiful and good sign this is, what a beautiful and good sign that this is, that we had, I had another son, Kimo God, Gadi V'sanukla, a line from the Gemara and Shabbos, that basically alludes to the fact that we are, thrilled with all this good luck. V'doma lo ha'orchem l'gad shulchan. Another quote from a pasuk in Yeshaya that shows us how excited we are for this great luck of what's taking place. And so the meaning of the word God and the word Bagad is that Leah was so ecstatic when God was born, and this was just another very festive event. So skip to the next line in the middle of the next line. V'lo yadati. Davaracher. The end of the second line, davar acher, lama nikres teva achas bagad, kamo bagadeta bi. He said, Rashi says there's actually another explanation for what the word bagad could actually mean, and that is that it connotes some sort of faithlessness. Keshabata el shevchasi, kish shabagad be'ishas ne'urim. Leah is accusing her husband, Yaakov, of being faithless because he goes ahead and marries her maidservants. And so you'll ask, what in the world is he being faithless with? I don't understand. She gave him her maidservant to marry. So take a look at the Chizkuni in source number 3 in the Hebrew. Vatomer Leah Bagad Lashon Begida, that afal pishin asati lo shivchasi lo hayalo lishkavima. It was a test. Leah was testing Yaakov. Leah saw that her sister gave her maidservant, and so she thought maybe Yaakov would be thinking, I want my other wife's maidservant also. So Leah said, that would be inappropriate because I already have children. I don't need him to have more children for me. So she said, let me test him. Let's see if he really loves me. Again, remember the mindset of Leah. Last we checked in with Leah, she had given birth to a fourth son, and she finally thanked Hashem. She was so excited and ecstatic. For whatever reason, she was finally happy and feeling fulfilled. If that was not because of the relationship with her husband, at the very least, it was because of the relationship that she had four new beautiful children in the world. And so she seemed to have been good. But now, for whatever reason, she decides to test Yaakov Avinu, and she says, hey, Yaakov, how would you like to marry another woman? How would you like Zilpah? So Meyachar Sheyalo, yaladati lo arba banim, right? Me'achar she yaladati lo arba banim. And the reason why she's testing him, and the reason why this clearly was not a serious request when she said to marry Zilpa, was because she already had four sons. V'afal pisha ba'al shivchas Rachel. Oh, you'll say, well, Yaakov married Rachel, so Yaakov married Rachel's maidservant, so why shouldn't he be able to marry Leah's maidservant? Well, the Rachel ohayu la banim. Bila, it made sense to marry because she was going to be the bearer of Rachel's only chance of having children. But Leah didn't need that. The ben hashini sheyalda shivchasa karaso asher. But then you'll say, well, God willing, get to it next week. We're going to learn about God's brother Asher, and Asher seems to be Leah seems to be ecstatic about Asher. According to everyone, she's ecstatic. Klomar shevach hu li shehanachtiv l'shkava im shimchasi, that she names him Asher, which seems to be some sort of allusion to a praise to Hashem over this new beautiful son. And the answer is that it was most likely that she had accepted by that point that Yaakov was married to Zilpah, nothing she could do about it anymore, and so now another son just means another son, and so that's beautiful. But God, according to the second opinion in Rashi, and according to the only opinion of the Chizkuni, is basically just saying that Leah was really upset that God was born, because he was the physical representation of the fact that she was mad at her husband for taking her seriously when he tried to test her by giving Zilpah over to him. Therefore, we have two basic ways how we can look at the early childhood of God. We can either take the first perspective from the first Daya in Rashi, which explains that Leah was so excited that she said, Mazel Tov, this is a beautiful Mazel, this is so great, and that means God probably had a really nice childhood, everything was great in the world. However, if we take the perspective of the Chizkuni and the second opinion in Rashi, then that means when Leah saw God, she did not like God very much. And if Leah was the one who named him, that means on some level she assumed that she was kind of the acting mother, if you will. And if she was the acting mother of a child that she did not like very much because he was the representation of her faithless husband, then that's not going to be a very good childhood. And so therefore, you would assume that God might not have had such a great childhood. And in fact, Nechama Price points this out exactly. She says that it must be that God had rejected child syndrome, if you will, that he didn't have anyone to love him. I guess his biological mother, Zilpah, hopefully loved him, but that Leah Imenu might not have loved him, and that might have, you know, not been a very emotionally healthy situation for him. And therefore, you begin to get a perspective if you assume, like this alternative idea, that God would not have had too much going for him, because again, we've seen through many of the other sons that whenever they found themselves in an emotionally difficult or emotionally questionable situation, that meant not necessarily the best things, right? Reuven, who always was trying to fight and support for his mother, Shimon and Levi, always trying to fight for the legacy of their side of the family, right? The whole idea that I think Nechama pointed out that specifically they went ahead and killed out the entire city of Shechem because they were mad at their father that he didn't speak up, because of the fact that they thought that their father didn't care about their side of the family that much. So it's never a good sign, but that's how we're meant to, according to the second perspective, to think of God in his early life, that he was not accepted by Leah, and that would not be good. So then we get to this later part of the life of God. We don't really know anything about God himself in terms of events that took place with him in the Torah, but we do know a very famous event in the Torah, not with God himself, but with the tribe of God in general, and that is in source number 4. Take a look in Sefer Bamidbar, Perek Lamed Beis, chapter 32, that we'll read the English. The Reubenites and the Gadites owned cattle in very great numbers. The tribes of Reuben and Gad were famous because they had so much cattle. Did they really have that much cattle, more than any other tribes? Unclear exactly, but they had a lot of cattle, and they said, we need to find a place for all this cattle to graze somewhere. Where are we going to go? There must not be any room in the land of Israel. It's such a tiny land after all. So therefore they said, Moshe, we would like to take our cattle and our people, and we'd like to live on the east side of the Yarden, on the east side of the Jordan River. Would that be okay? Moshe got very upset, but nonetheless, the rest, as they say, was history, and they ended up being on the right side of the Yarden. That's where they camped. Now you'll notice over here that Chetzi Menasha, the half of the tribe of Menasha, is not brought up over here, because Reuven and Gad were the first and only tribes that made this ask from Moshe, and the other half of Menasha came a little bit later on, but Reuven and Gad were the main tribes to jump in to say, we want to live on the east side of the Jordan. Again, also not something that they are looked on incredibly highly for, that they decided to be separate from the rest of the Jewish nation. How are we meant to view God as a result of this incident that took place when they asked to live on the east side of the Yarden? So take a look at source number 5 of the Rabbeinu Bachya. the members of the tribe of Gad and Reuben came, the Gadites came up with the idea of remaining on the far bank of the Yarden. So in other words, if you're looking for a single tribe to blame over here, it was clearly the tribe of Gad that was to blame. Oh, you'll say, what, Reuben, they were involved too? Yes, but if you look in the Pasuk, specifically when they... Not the first Pasuk in the source, but the second or third Pasuk, when they go to ask Reuven, what does the Pasuk say? Vayavou b'nei Gad u'b'nei Reuven. All of a sudden, the Pasuk switches the order. It says, you know, first God comes, and then the sons of God come, and then the sons of Reuven come. Why is God first? Well, God is mentioned first, according to the Rabbeinu Bachya, because of the fact that they were the ones leading the charge. Why? So again, let's go back. The God, source number five, the Gadites came up with the idea of remaining on the far bank of the Yarden. They were personally much braver than the members of Reuven, as we know from Moshe's blessing. We'll see the Moshe's bracha in a little bit, but he gives this bracha where he says, "Vatarov zeroa afkarko," that tearing off the arm and even the head. They're just a very strong people, the tribe of God. They were not afraid that by choosing to remain physically distant from the main body of the people on the far side of the Jordan, they would be isolated and easy prey for the surrounding nations, right? So where the tribe of God ends up camping out and where their land ends up being is the far, not only are they on the east side of the Jordan, but they're on the far east side, meaning Reuven is closer to the rest of the Jewish people than the tribe of God is. Why is God so far? Because they don't care. They're strong as anything. They're the strongest. They're giborim, as they say, and they can fight anyone. And so they're not concerned about being, you know, basically just open to the wild over there with someone being able to attack them. They'll be able to guard everyone. They'll be able to guard their own people, and perhaps they'll even be able to stop any sort of nations from breaking into the rest of the Jewish nation. So they're fine over there. But they are, most importantly, they're understood over here as being the instigators of something that's not so such a positive thing for these two tribes. Take a look at source number six at how Professor Price frames the relationship between Reuven and God, because this is not actually the only place where we see Reuven and God together, but let's take a look at see what she says. Source number six. The eldest child of Zilpah is stripped of his firstborn related privileges because of his place in the larger family structure. In spite of being Zilpah's eldest, he is Yaakov's eighth son. Furthermore, his mother is only a maidservant. At least to some, this picture suggests that we might expect a similarity to Reuven. This is a fascinating comparison that she makes. The rejected firstborn of Leah. So in other words, we've seen before that Reuven was rejected as the firstborn, quite literally because he doesn't get the kahuna, he doesn't get the priesthood, and he doesn't get the malchus, he doesn't get the kingship, right? Levi gets the priesthood, and Yehuda gets the kingship. So Reuven sort of gets left in the dust over here. So Reuven's a rejected firstborn. Who is another rejected firstborn? Well, it seems that God is the other rejected firstborn. So let's keep reading. Both men are resentful and feel defrauded of their firstborn rights. Why are they rejected for the role of the firstborn? Well, Reuven is rejected because he is the son of Leah, and because of his misbehavior with Bilhah, as we said when we learned about Reuven. And God is rejected because he is the son of Zilpah, the maidservant of Leah. Both brothers feel scorned because of their father's preference for Rachel. These shared feelings create a bond between Reuven and God, which is reflected on numerous occasions. Now we're on the right paragraph. Similarly, it is plausible that the two rejected oldest sons intend to live in their own lands away from the watchful eye of the other tribes. Rabbi Shamshon Rafala Hirsch writes that settling by themselves within special boundaries outside those of the general nation appealed to them. They want to live apart from the rest of the nation of Israel. And Rabbi Mordechai Breuer suggests, he makes this is an incredible idea, that Moshe immediately recognizes the underlying motivation for their request to separate themselves from the nation. As rejected eldest children, they feel compelled to follow the path of prior firstborn castoffs, who leave the Jewish people, meaning this is akin to those previous individuals among the Jewish people, right? We don't think of them as Jews, we think of them as the enemy, but they were castoffs of the Jewish people. Esav and Yishmael were part of the Jewish Abrahamic tradition, but they were cast off, and so in some ways, Rabbi Breuer suggests that God and Reuven said, we're kind of like castoffs, we don't want to be part of the 12 tribes, and this accounts for Moshe's harsh reaction to their request. He understands that it has nothing to do with the size of their flocks, but rather with their perceived destiny, which they see as requiring them to abandon their brothers. And so therefore, we see that Reuven and God are really two peas in a pod, which makes a lot of sense, by the way, because we spoke extensively about how Shimon and Levi were two peas in a pod, right? Yaakov Avinu even calls them essentially two peas in a pod. But Reuven, this poor guy, he gets left out. He doesn't have anyone who he's really close with. It seems like God is the one who he was close with. Ah, you'll say, God, if we assume that the minimalist perspective is that each of the 12 brothers were born 1 year after the other. It doesn't have to be like that, but if we do assume like that, then that must mean that Reuben was 7 years old when 7 or 8 years old when Gad was born. But nonetheless, regardless of this slight age difference, they ended up being very close, and certainly the tribes ended up being very close as well. How are we therefore meant to view God? And as we've been doing for the past few brothers in particular, where it's unclear, where there are so few actions by the actual brothers, but by the actual people themselves. So we go to the bracha to determine what sort of a person they are. And the bracha of Yaakov and Moshe is basically identical to one another. They both have the same message. So let's take a look at source number 7, Yaakov's bracha to God. So it says, God gedur yigudenu v'hu yagur akev. Right? So the bracha basically is a very cute constant use of the letters Gimel Dalet, Gimel Dalet, Gimel Dalet. And the whole message of this pasuk basically is that Yaakov is saying to God, you are going to be attacked, God, but guess what? You will be able to fight back. In other words, Yaakov is praising the tribe of God for their strength. They are strong people. Nothing else really to say. That's all there is to say. Take a look at source number 8, the Rashbam. The troops of the entire nation of Israel will follow God, who is the vanguard in the wars of conquest, as we know from Devarim, where Moshe charges them with this task. On the return from battle, this tribe, instead of being in the vanguard, will be the rear guard, again, the most exposed to enemy action. They will thus form a buffer for the Jewish armies at all times. They are so appreciated. This tribe of God is so appreciated because they're just very strong people, and they use their strength to help everyone. Source number 9, Rabbeinu Bachya. Yaakov praised God's prowess, predicting that he would be involved in many military encounters and that troops would flock to his banner. In other words, right, so every son has different attributes to bring to the table, and the tribe of God, the attribute they bring that's the most important and the most significant for them is they're just strong, and their strength is something that will be used many times throughout many wars throughout the history of the Jewish people. So that's what they are praised for. And Moshe says a similar message to him in source number 10. Ulagad amar baruch marchiv gad klavi shachin v'tarif zeruah af karko. This line that we quoted above, that Moshe says that blessed is God who enlarges, blessed is God like G-O-D, who blessed is Hashem who enlarges God G-A-D. Poised is he like a lion to tear off an arm and scalp. He chose for himself the best, for there is the portion of the revered chieftain where the heads of the people come. He executed the Lord's judgments and his decisions for Israel. Again, take a look at source number 11. What in the world does this pasuk, what does this bracha mean? So two explanations. The Ibn Ezra explained the source number 11, and Ibn Ezra explained that in keeping with Moshe likening God to a lion, he said, blessed is he who broadens him, meaning blessed is he who imparted might to God so that all potential enemies who see him will flee from him, and there will be none to constrict him. And it is also possible that the children of God took more territory than did the children of Reuben, since they were valiant warriors. According to the Ibn Ezra, the bracha of the bracha of Moshe Rabbeinu means that God is such a strong tribe. And according to the Ramban, it's maybe speaking a little bit more to the fact that God had more territory than the tribe of Reuben on the east side of the Jordan. Again, why would they have more territory? Perhaps also because they were just mighty and powerful, so they got more land because of that. Ultimately, we therefore see that the clear one takeaway from God is just physical strength, right? And so why is that a lesson to learn from the tribe of God? I think it's more of just a perspective and understanding, right? The notion that Jewish people are, you sort of think of like the classic anti-Semitic cartoon of what a Jew is, like a weak little man, a little rabbi, whatever. That's not Jewish people. Jewish people are strong. The tribe of God is the representation of physical strength in a way that many other tribes might not have been able to live up to. Now, you'll say there were other tribes that were strong as well, right? The tribe of Yehuda, the kings, they were strong as well. But okay, nonetheless, the tribe of God were very mighty people, and they were strong. They were fighters, and they were warriors. That's one takeaway of who they were. However, there is an entirely different perspective that has developed that I want to share with you of who the tribe of God is, and that starts mostly by identifying the Jewish month the tribe of God is connected to. Which month would you say the tribe of God might be connected to? Well, you say, I don't know, so some suggestions that were thrown at earlier in the Shir at Shul, maybe God is connected to the month of Nisan. Why? Well, we know Nisan is really Yehuda, but maybe Nisan because of the fact that it's a month of redemption, and we're going to have wars in our to bring redemption, so that would be God. Or maybe some other people suggested Tishrei, because Tishrei is a time, actually I didn't fully understand what he said, but someone suggested Tishrei, and maybe other months you can say. However, that's not. Let's take a look at source number 12. The B'nai Sassachar says, Hinei Elul Yidyaches L'Shevet Gad. The month of Elul is connected to the tribe of God. What an odd month to connect God to. We think of Elul as like this massive month of transition and tshuva and introspection and cheshbon ha-nefesh. What in the world does the tribe of God have to do with any of that? And so the answer lies in an idea that we said earlier, we quoted in the name of Rashi, but we'll quote it in an additional source now, in source number 13, in the Targum HaMiyuchas to Yonatan. He says as follows, what was going on when Leah named God? So when she named him, again, there were those two perspectives that were shared. Rashi gave the second perspective, which was shared by the Chizkuni, that Leah was furious at Yaakov, and God was the physical representation of everything she hated about the situation that she was in, that her husband didn't love her and had no issue taking a fourth woman to marry. And then, that's one perspective. But the other perspective, the first perspective in Rashi, of what the word Bagad means, that God is named after, is Ve'amarta Leah, source number 13, Ve'amarta Leah, Asa Mazla Tava, that you, God, are the representation of a good mazel. Why are you the representation of a good mazel? Because, take it as face value, Leah was upset that she stopped having children. She now went on to have more children. What a beautiful thing this is. This is a good mazel in the world. And Rabbi Reisman in source number 14 takes this to the next level in many, many ways. And basically, we won't read it inside because of the time, but please feel free to take a look at it as well on your own time. And basically, the idea that he builds up over here is that what is the month of Elul if not a time of year in which we are seeking to attain for ourselves a good mazel. And in Judaism, we know that we don't really believe in mazel. There's no such thing as mazel. We believe that the world has, maybe other nations of the world do run on mazel, that they have luck and they have destiny. But the Jewish nation, what do we have? We have a Kadosh Baruch Hu. So there's no such thing as a bad mazel, no such thing in theory, maybe even as a good mazel, because we just have to be connected to Hashem. We have to dive into Hashem. And even a terrible thing in theory could be overturned by our relationship with Hashem. So we don't have to worry about mazel in the same way that other nations worry about mazel. And therefore, God is the representation that our mazel can be, God, G-A-D, is the representation that our mazel could be one way, that things could be going badly, and maybe therefore bring Leah back into this for a second, right? Leah, things were going badly for her because she had four sons and she felt like she was on top. She was the only one of the Imahos that had sons. Then all of a sudden, Bilhah comes in and she has some sons. And so then all of a sudden, you know, Leah doesn't feel like she's on top anymore. What is she going to do to bring her mazel back? Well, Zilpah comes along through Leah, has another son, and all of a sudden you'll see in the blink of an eye, Leah's mazel changed once again, and she was able to have children, again, surrogate children, but children nonetheless. And we therefore see that God is the representation of the ability that we have as a nation and as individuals to change our mazel, that we shouldn't just rest on our laurels and assume that if things are going badly and things are rough and we don't know what the judgment is going to be against us in the month of Tishrei after the month of Elul, then we should realize that we have an entire month, we have an entire time period, we have an entire tribe that is all about good mazel, all about transitioning ourselves as individuals, of not worrying about who we were, but deciding that we can be great and we can change whatever negative mazel we have. So again, these are the two main takeaways, I think, of the tribe of God, two on totally different spectrums, from two totally different points of view, but one to show that he was the strongest tribe, and the notion of the importance of being strong as individuals, physically strong, but also the notion of recognizing the attribute of having a good mazel, of always being able to see that life is about building a relationship with Hashem, and that through that relationship with Hashem, we don't have to worry about the bad mazel, because we can always connect with Hashem, and through our tefillos, we can strengthen our mazel and strengthen our destiny and what is meant to happen to us. So with that concludes our shiur on God. God willing, next week we'll continue with Asher, but for now, we'll stop right here. I'll say Shavuot Tov and wish everyone a beautiful night.